Hello?
Hello.
What's going on?
What up, Lana Giroux?
How's it going?
So, just to give you a brief intro, today on the podcast, I want to welcome Lana Giroux, who, as the Blue Note, as the title states, my podcast is centered around music, but he encompasses so many other things on the creative level. So, I just thought it would be interesting to talk to him because you are a director, writer, and co-creator of the comedy web series We Got a Good Thing, right?
Correct, correct.
And but you're also Lana Giroux of the Cool Weirdos Collective, a group from Newark, New Jersey, who is making music and is achieving a good amount of success. Lana Giroux, welcome to the Blue Note.
Thank you for having me, Karina. I do appreciate it.
So first of all, talk to me about who Lana Giroux is. Where did you grow up? Where were you raised? Who are you?
But you know what? That was great that you had the background information that you already had on me. But yeah, Lana Giroux, flip the eight letters. Lana Giroux is basically a play on words I made up a while ago. I call it pre-associated writing. I used to just jot things down and write them backwards for some odd reason. So this one name I wrote down, I just spelled original backwards, which I feel like just encompassed who I am 100% around the board. It's kind of hard to pinpoint exactly what I do. So I consider myself a creative. I never really considered myself a rapper. I always preferred the term artist because I do a little bit more than rap, even when it comes to the music side of things. I produce. Sometimes I may have a melodic sound going on, and I act, I write, and direct as well. And I've been doing that for quite some time, and just linked up with my Cool Weirdos family, which we're basically brothers from different mothers and fathers.
Right.
We're basically a collective group, and we are parallel. We're basically on the same path. And we decided to team up and put our talents together and do what we're doing now.
You have so much going on that I have so many questions in my head, like flying around as you speak, because I want to know how you became associated with the Cool Weirdos. But first, I need you to take me back, right? So
okay.
You just started creating out of nowhere. Like, where did this passion for being an overall creative come from?
That's actually a great question. So since elementary school, I was acting in school plays. I found a passion for acting, which once I saw my older cousin, he went to a school called Art High. And during his 12th grade years, he had to shoot a film. And I remember watching that film in my grandmother's living room and just seeing my cousin on TV in that film just made me want to get into the art. I was always like artistic. I didn't know how deep it ran in my family.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of, you know, I have musicians in my family. Everybody in my family basically dibble in the arts a little bit. So from that point on, I was just like, I know what I want to be. I want to be an actor. I remember writing my first rap at like 12 years old. And from that point on, like, my mom's was like my biggest fan. Like,
aww.
It was crazy, but I ain't front, the rap was like about ham and cheese. But, you know, she definitely big me up and definitely supported me along the way.
Do you remember the first rap you ever wrote?
I don't remember it.
You're lying. You're lying, but it's okay.
No, listen, I promise you, if I remember it, I would spit it for you right now. Only thing I remember is that I was talking about ham and cheese.
Which is a very important topic for a 12-year-old, so that's fair. Okay.
Definitely. My mom was always very, very supportive of what I was doing. I grew up in a single-parent household, so that support from her was like, it was every, she made me feel like I was the star before any of this Cool Weirdo stuff, any of the We Got a Good Thing stuff, or anything like that.
Were you an only child?
No, actually, I'm the oldest of three. Well, I'm the oldest of four. I have a sister from my father's side as well.
Right, but not living in your household.
Correct. She came a little bit later.
Okay, and so are any of your other siblings artistic as well?
Yes, actually they are. My brother actually took after me. He raps, but he doesn't, you know, he's not going as hard for it like me. It's more like a hobby for him because he just grew up under it so much. And my brother was also one of my biggest fans. Him and my sister, once I used to record in my house and in my room, and, you know, my brother would come in there and listen to the raps, and he would always be so amazed. My sister actually grew up and come to find out she has an amazing voice.
Oh, wow.
But neither one of them are, like, pushing it. Like,
or, they're not pursuing,
you know,
it.
Actually, yeah, but they definitely have talent as well.
Okay. And so I want you to kind of take me through what happened after middle school, right? So from 12 to now, what was the journey like? Briefly, obviously, but...
Well, once I got to high school, there was a lot of rap battles going on in the hallway, which I had to leave one high school and go to another high school my senior year, so that was kind of awkward. It was one of the scariest things ever because I was leaving my friends, but I actually made it work for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And I just decided, I'm like, okay, if I'm going to be recognized on my last year and coming into this high school, nobody really knows me. I have to make myself popular in some way. So I would battle guys in a hallway and win. Not only that.
Off the dome?
Off the dome. I sometimes I have raps that's memorized. Mm-hmm. I'll just go in. I do know how to spit off. A lot of my raps that you've heard lately has been off the dome.
Dope.
That's how I record. You know, sometimes I write, sometimes I don't. But that particular school that I transferred to had a, I went to a technical school where it was like a trade school for like electric and shop and stuff like that. And I was in the electric class and it just definitely was not my passion.
Mm-hmm.
I actually had filled out for Art High, but I didn't get accepted for acting around that time. I got accepted for drawing, which was weird to me because I'm not really great at drawing.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it was something that I loved back then, but it wasn't my passion. So I went to North Tech, which basically that particular school was a trade school as well, but they picked up a new trade, which was a music class.
Dope.
So it was music 101.
Mm-hmm.
But I was in my last year, so I could not trade my shop. So I was so adamant.
Mm-hmm.
I wrote a script. I used to write scripts. So when you say, how did I get into this? Instead of going outside and dibbling, dabbling in the streets, my mom was really strict. So my imagination was always working. Like, that, my mm-hmm. imagination was my best friend.
Come through, so mama. Yes, mom, for the win.
Yeah, I have to give mom's props because if it wasn't for her, you know, I wouldn't be on the path that I'm on.
Right.
I used to sit at the computer up all night. It didn't matter if I had school the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to write scripts.
Yo, so that's how you know you love something or someone.
Definitely.
Like, if you could stay up all night to talk to that one person or to do whatever it is that you want to do, that's how you know it's real.
Definitely. Definitely. Mm-hmm. Like, See, my whole thing is I was just a self-starter. It was like I didn't know how to get into certain things. The only way I knew is to create my own.
Right.
So within doing that, you know, of course, it was definitely fun. But in order to get into this class, I put a script. I gave my boy a script, and I told him to put it on the music teacher's desk. And I don't know why I chose a script. I just felt like I could do a musical or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So he put the script on the music teacher's desk. That day, within 2 hours later, I got called up from my shop class, which was electric,
mm-hmm.
and the music teacher was just blown away. He gave me 12 gospel songs, and he asked me to write a play around those gospel records. I came back the next day, let him tell the story. I had the whole script done. I had the majority of the script done the next day, and he was just totally impressed. So that was like going from a trade school to another trade school, but making it work for me.
Yes,
because I was able to write and direct my own play coming out of high school, which was put on at Essex County College in the Mary Birch Theater.
That's very impressive.
We had 3 showings, and I was actually written up in the Star Ledger.
Wow.
And that was my second time, because before I went to high school, when I went to the first trade school,
mm-hmm.
once I walked in high school, certain people had already seen me in the Star Ledger because I filmed a project around where I lived at using the people of the community. Star Ledger had came out and wrote me up for that. Then 4 years later, once I was in 12th grade, I got written up again for, you know, writing and directing the play for my high school, which was never done. It had never been done in a technical school.
That's amazing. Damn.
Yeah, so that was a great experience. And from there on, I just said, this is definitely what I want to do. It was just about applying myself. I was
mm-hmm.
hired to direct a couple of plays off-Broadway. I starred in a couple of plays off-Broadway.
Oh, so you graduated high school and got to work.
Yeah, I just went straight to New York. I just went.
Like you.
I said, listen, Like,
you know what? That's a great-ass example of people who. Because, you know, you hear a lot of people saying, I hate the 9-to-5 life. You know, school's not for me, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, you can make it work for yourself other ways, too. And that's like the perfect example of someone who, you know, is like, I don't like the 9-to-5 desk job, but I'm going to make it work. Like, so
mm-hmm.
there's really no excuse. You can do whatever the hell you want to do.
No, definitely.
You know, like
you just can't be, you just can't let society dictate who you are and dictate what you need to do because, you know, when it comes to priorities, especially when you start getting a little bit older, you start realizing that it's certain things that you have to put it, you have to prioritize, you have to pay rent, you have
right.
to just make sure everything stays on track for you to live.
Absolutely.
So I always live by the philosophy, I have to cash that reality check in order to live my dreams. You know what I'm saying? And when I say reality check, you know, that's just a play on words. You know, like I was always told, sometimes I'll talk to people and they'll say, well, you know, that's 1 in a million. Well, you know, you're trying something that's really hard, and
mm-hmm.
it just never discouraged me.
Right.
You know, it was a reality check that is like, okay, well, I have to, you know, make my dreams come true because it's my vision. So, of course, other people will not see it until it's actually visible for you.
How are you so certain that this is going to work out the way that you want it to work out?
I can't say that I've always been certain. When you have people around you that believe in you,
mm-hmm.
once I started making music and I put my first CD out, the people who was falling in love with my music, I had no clue that it would be that way. I tell people all the time I'm kind of shy. No one believes it. None of my friends, none of the cool girls
about to say,
that about me.
If you don't stop the lies... Okay.
No, I'm definitely, it's like Erykah Badu, I'm an artist and I'm sensitive about my shit.
Right.
So it was one of those things where I was always on a fence. Like, I would make a lot of music, but I wouldn't put it out. I'm a perfectionist when it comes to sound. So it was one of those things where I just had to jump into it. And when I jumped into it and jumped off the cliff, being that music was so accessible and that I was able to create my own studio, that's all I did. Even right now, like before you called me, I'm recording. That's all I do, either record or write. So the certainty just comes from the gift that was given to me by God. Like, ooh. I know regardless of the fact, it doesn't matter how high I go with this mm-hmm. on a scale of the people knowing, I'm going to always be an artist to the day I die.
Damn.
And music is therapy for me. So anything that I go through in life, I was always able to get over it because I'm a reflector. And being that when you're writing, you're talking to yourself sometimes. I know
yep.
for me, I'm talking to myself. Sometimes I write raps months prior to today. If I listen to them today, depending on what I'm going through,
mm-hmm.
it's like I left myself messages.
Yep.
You get what I'm saying?
Like a journal. Like you're keeping exactly. a journal or a diary.
Exactly. You know, it's just something that I enjoy more than anything in the world.
So basically what you're saying is whether everything blows up or not, you're an artist regardless. So
I'm an
it's
artist,
not even
regardless.
About... Okay, I hear you. And yeah. I didn't ask you that, you know, to discourage you or to place a word of doubt on your life or whatever. But I just wanted to ask you that because there are so many people who aspire to be something who do struggle with that, who do struggle with figuring out how to... keep that faith alive as they're going through their journey. So I kind of wanted you to express how you're able to maintain that faith and how you're able to keep it moving and pushing even when things may look bleak at times or sometimes you get in your own head. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. No, that was a great question. I definitely took it for what it was. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like I just said, like I'm an artist to the day I die. So it just really does not matter, you know. And I'm not going to sit up here as if I never lost faith. I did lose faith before.
Mm-hmm.
I went through a period in life where I just felt like, what am I doing? You get
right.
what I'm saying? It was a lot of things going on that was just taking me off my path. And I remember praying, well, you know, just getting older. Just like I said, priorities, responsibility. I had a child.
Okay.
So for me, becoming a father was just one of those things where, you know, I had all this time and this freedom before, but now I have this amazing child that is going to, you know, look up to me. He's mm-hmm. in my image. So as a man, I was always okay with having a daughter. I didn't want to have a son. Not because I didn't want a son or anything like that. It was just the fact that I knew that I would have to really step my game up. So I was kind of mm-hmm. like not up for the challenge.
Mm-hmm.
But being that my son is actually in my image, he's a boy. He's going to look up to me. I have to make sure I raise him to be the best person that he can be. When I stopped and didn't have faith for a minute, you know, I remember telling God that I didn't want the position that he put me in. I didn't want to be the leader. I didn't want to be the go-to guy in my family. I just wanted to be a regular guy, you know?
Yeah.
Like, forget all this. It's too stressful.
So...
And I went through this time in life where I felt empty. And I was wondering, I'm like, why do I feel so empty? And the mm-hmm. reason why I was feeling empty is because I was neglecting the position that God had gave me and put me in life. So I had to step back in that position because it's not like it was taken away. I just removed myself from it.
That was a message for somebody because it's true. You sometimes you feel like you're so overwhelmed with everything. You're like, okay, I can't focus on that because now I have all these big responsibilities. When in reality, God puts you in a position, even though you have a lot going on, he makes it work if you're steady and if
Correct.
You're determined to do what he's placed you on the earth to do. So it's so
yes.
interesting.
Yep, definitely. That's definitely how I move now. Like, but right now, everything is intact. I know exactly what I'm going for.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes, like I said, things will happen in life where you're thrown off track. But the great thing about that is to have great people in your corner.
Yep.
The cool widows, we're all about all for one and one for all.
But time
out. We're not gonna let each other fail.
Because you mentioned, and I spoke to Rolling Stone P recently, and he kind of shared the same sentiment that the cool weirdos is like this brotherhood and you guys are family. But then you also mentioned something interesting about your own family and about being the leader. Are you like the man of your house because you were raised in a single parent household and you're the oldest? Like, do you feel that pressure?
Well, I didn't know what that pressure was when I was younger. So right. when I witnessed my mom and my father split it, and after that, I witnessed my mom's working two jobs, trying to make sure we kept our heads above water.
Right.
And within that, I was the next in line. So, like, if there's the oldest child in the household, if one of the components of the parents leave, you're the next in line, and you have to take on that responsibility right away, even if you don't want it. Watching my younger brother and siblings while my mom's mm-hmm. at work, making sure they eat, making sure when they're outside, nothing happens, mm-hmm. picking them up from school. You know, it was just a lot of responsibility that was placed on me. And I was okay with it because I just felt like I was helping out my mom.
Right.
You get what I'm saying?
Right.
And I could say that shaped me to who I am right now. Definitely a leader. I'm definitely the man in my house and just with everything that I do.
How old were you when your parents split up?
I was probably about 8 years old.
Do you still have a relationship with your dad?
Funny thing is, I moved to Philly a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when, around that time is where I was telling you, my faith with music and everything was just gone. Like, I moved to Philly because of a job, and I just needed a change of scenery. I felt like I was in the one place for too long.
Okay.
Before I moved, I called my father. I contacted my father, and I just let him know everything that I felt. You know what I'm saying? I had to let it out, because if I didn't let it out, it would basically be one of those things where it could be something that's holding me back.
Right.
He was real accepting to that, and once I moved, him just looking at me and understanding exactly who I am in life and how I progressed without him, he was proud of me for that, and he expressed it, which allowed our relationship to grow. He would contact me every day when I was out there.
Mm-hmm.
So from that point on, this has been like, what, probably like 2012, 2011, I moved to Philly.
Mm-hmm.
Since that point on, me and my father, we've definitely been great. He's definitely one of my biggest fans as well. He'll text me, "Good morning, son," every day. You get what I'm saying? So
What about that situation of you being able to let it out? At what point were you like, okay, I forgive you?
The reason why I forgive them is because I grew up. Now, I went through a relationship myself, right? And we all get into these situations and feel like this thing is going to work, or I'm going to do everything right. I can to make it work.
Right.
And it came to a point where I was blaming him for certain things. As a child, you don't know how hard it is to, you know, sometimes maintain a relationship.
Right.
So when me and my son and mom split, it was one of those things where it was like, damn, I need to talk to my dad. And the reason why I need to talk to my dad is because I need to figure out who I am. And within talking to him, I realized exactly who I was, because we are very similar. I mean, it's almost scary.
Yeah.
To the point where he allows me to see who I don't want to become.
Isn't that a blessing in disguise?
Exactly. And I'm a firm believer of this. You need, I don't care how much grudge you hold against the other parent, you need to one day talk to that parent just to see if the mistakes you're making are hereditary.
Yeah. Or as a result of the void that was left behind.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, you know, within talking to him, like, I would basically do things the way that came naturally to me. And mm-hmm. 9 times out of 10, anything that came naturally to me came naturally to him.
Right.
Which I realized it doesn't mean that it was right, though.
Yes.
You understand what I'm mm-hmm. saying? So having that relationship with him, you know, just helps me as a father. Even though he wasn't there for me, it just helps me as a father, which him not being there was the reason why I'm there for my son, like 185, 90, 200, 1,000%, whatever yep. percentage is the highest percentage. You get what I'm saying?
I completely understand. So how did that situation then inform who you are as an artist? Are you as transparent with your music as you are in your life? Or do you take more of the recreational route, like use music as an escape?
Damn, that's a good question. I'm more transparent in music than I would be sometimes having a conversation with someone. And because music is therapy for me, so I really hold nothing back when it comes to that. Because, you know, I had a joke one time with my cousin. I was going through something, and I was like, man, I'm hurting. And, you know, he was like, well, it's not going to last. One day you're going to be so happy where things are just going to be great. And I mm-hmm. said, well, the flip side to that is if I'm happy, I may not be able to create.
Right.
So, and that's all due to how I looked at happiness at that point. You mm-hmm. get what I'm talking mm-hmm. about? I see happiness totally different now.
Right.
But a lot of the things I go through, it pours out of me like water when it's time to create. I can't talk about anything false. Like, it's hard for me to talk about things that are not of me or faking it. You know, I wasn't never a fake it till you make it type person.
Mm-hmm.
I was more of a take me as I am type person.
Right.
And like I said, when I started putting out music and the response that I was getting. Because my music was always deemed as positive, and this was around the time before your Kendrick and J. Cole was popping off. You get what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. So positive rapper had a kind of a stigma on it.
Yep.
And it kind of made me feel like, do I want to be considered as that? You get what I'm talking about?
Absolutely.
I didn't really think that it was positive per se. I just felt like it was my life. But I guess the translation with that is people were relating to it in a way to where it was like, wow, I've been through that too. Or that's crazy. When you said this, this made me think of this. So, you know, that is a positive thing. Like I had to rearrange how I looked at things and the certain type of words that I would say, I don't want to be considered that. I won't want to be considered that.
Right.
Now that I'm a little bit older and wiser and a little bit more seasoned with this, I just know to basically reflect upon things before I judge them.
Because you've been transparent with your music through and through, for mm-hmm. the most part, with the exception of what you just mentioned, what is that like, right? So, 'cause as an artist, as a creator, you know, you're vulnerable when you create art. But so then to have to put that out into the universe is also a very scary thing. How did you deal with that? Like, let's just say putting out your first song. Was it a big deal to you? Were you able to do that with no problem? How did you handle that?
I did have a fear with putting out music before, mm-hmm. Because like I said, I was super sensitive about it.
Mm-hmm.
And that word vulnerable is a good word because for a long time, I hated that word. Like, I'm not going to be vulnerable.
You thought it was weak, right?
Yeah, that's exactly. Vulnerable equal weak to me.
Mm-hmm. Quite the opposite.
Not realizing I was being vulnerable with my music. I didn't realize that at that point.
Right.
It was until I did some reflecting and I realized, like, wow, I say I don't want to be vulnerable. But right here in this space is the only space I'm able to be vulnerable in without a problem.
Mm-hmm.
I never had any bad responses to my music at all. It was never any bad responses to make me feel like I don't want to do this or I don't want to put it out. It was just all me. You get what I'm saying?
Yeah, as it usually is. Yeah.
Yeah, me trying to figure out me. But I've always stepped up to a challenge, though. Like, I never let none of this stuff stop me. Like, I'm giving you some insight of what internally was going on with me.
Mm-hmm.
But externally, you would have never known.
Right.
You get what I'm talking about? Like I say, I'm shy. Nobody believes that. They won't know because I don't let fear control me. For me, and it's what I teach my son, fear only means that you're somewhere where you don't supposed to be
mm-hmm.
or you're experiencing something new. Fear is just an alert. It's just alerting you that something new is happening or you're somewhere where you don't need to be, so get the hell up out of there.
In Jesus' name.
So for me, it was like, if I allow fear to stop me from going on stage where I feel the most comfortable at, then how would I ever really live? You get what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. At what point do you feel like, okay, now I'm going to be a part of the Cool Weirdos? How does that even happen? Like, did you all sit around at a table and say, okay, we're going to create this collective? Were you part of it in the beginning stages? How did this come about?
Well, me and P, we have a long history together. Me and Rolling Stone P, we've created music before the Cool Weirdos. I've produced records for him in the past, which doesn't play a part. Well, it plays a part in the development process, but the success that he's made, created on his own, was basically all on him. But it was all, we were still together in that mold. We were just pushing ourselves separately.
Mm-hmm.
But I was always there for him at his shows. He was always there for me at my shows. So that was like my ride or die in this. You get what I'm talking about? Because we went through similar situations. We've been through the ups and downs in this thing. I would say him more so than me, because there was a time, like I said, that I stopped and he didn't. You know, I let my fear stop or just being at a certain point in my life. And he just kept going. And I mentioned that in the Director's Cut song. I said, P got the stone rolling. June, the big homie. When I lost my appetite, both these niggas stayed hungry. And that was basically saying, like, yo, when I lost my appetite for this, they kept going. And I admired that about them because they didn't forget about me during that whole process. So P actually started the Cool Weirdos. And he let me know what was going on. I, at the beginning, didn't really know if I wanted to be a part of a collective because I work best alone is how I felt. But I felt more comfortable with them than anybody else.
Right.
Not only that, like I said, like he's like my best friend. Not like, he is my best friend. So just doing business with friends, I never really wanted to mix that because the friendship means more to me.
Yes.
So, but we basically, you know, we had a talk. And this thing is really simple. We are all in control of our own destiny.
Mm-hmm.
We are part of something that's moving together. So we're all in the car together trying to get to a destination.
And you know what? It's very obvious. Like when you just said you didn't want to be a part of something because you work better together, from the outside looking in, I can tell you with certainty that it does not look like you're a band or like you're this group of people. You look like a collective that wants each individual to thrive in their uniqueness and in their originality and in who they are.
Definitely.
So that shows.
That's exactly what we are. We're not a group. You know, we're a squad. We're a crew. We're the best word is collective. It's like, you know, I had a talk with them and I told them, I said, you know, this is like Knights at the Round Table. When we all come to this round table, we all should have an army behind us. We have to be able to bring, you know, what do you bring to this table?
Right.
If you don't bring nothing to this table, then you can't sit at the table, which means that everybody has to own their shit. You get what I'm talking about? Like, we're all each individually our own boss. And, you know, P and June do a great job with running the Cool Weirdos and, you know, running the releasing of music and things of that nature. So it's one of those things where, shout out to June, and I mentioned June, that's the business guy, but surrounded around Cool Weirdos, which is Venture Brothers. And, you know, shout out to him because, you know, this thing that he says is, you know, trust the process. He always reminds us to trust the process because through and through, no matter how far we get, there's always going to be some obstacles that arise that kind of almost knock you off your course.
Yeah.
So we all have to trust the process because we all want it.
Yep.
We all want it so bad. We've seen how this thing has broken up great groups and, you know, had people just becoming selfish or becoming greedy or, you know, we just got to remember it's one for all for one,
right.
and just trust the process. Nobody here is trying to make anyone lose. We're all trying to help everyone win.
And what's for you will be for you. If one gets an opportunity that the other doesn't get, you'll get another opportunity at another time. You know, like it's
And that's exactly how it feels. Like that's it. A win for any one of those guys is a win for me.
Right.
And vice versa. You get what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
So they go hard with the We Got a Good Thing show, you know, just as if they're a part of that show or in that show. You get what I'm saying? So it's one of those
And
things
I saw Wavy Arnold make an appearance.
So. Wavy made an appearance. That was the second season.
Mm-hmm.
And, I definitely had to, had Wavy in that as his character, Jeff Savage. Jeff Savage was a character that he does on Instagram sometime, and that character just always had me, like, laughing. So I had him come out, and he actually did his thing. Like,
example of you guys kind of using each other's strengths to enhance or enlighten the other.
Correct.
Yeah.
Any opportunity I got, I'm going to try to set those guys up.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you understand what I'm saying? Any opportunity I have, I'm going to try to set my team up for the same opportunity.
That's beautiful. And it you know what it shows? Again, it shows that you guys are not, it doesn't look, forced, and it looks like you're each your own person, and you're all very different from one another, which is also nice and refreshing to see as well. You know, the director's cut was my jam, and I, honestly, your verse was my favorite verse on that song.
You guys came out with the director's cut.
And I already told you that offline, so I just wanted to make it known to the public that, you know, if you hear that song, that's a really good verse.
Yeah. You know what? I love that. I love when I hear that because that verse had so much truth in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if you really listen to that verse after this interview, you'll probably hear more things that you didn't hear before.
Absolutely. Not after talking to you, yes, of course.
Yeah, it had so much truth in it, and I was being vulnerable and fearless, like, at the same time of what I was saying. That was, to me, I was knitting the crew together. Like, I was letting everybody know how strong we were and we were forced to be reckoned with.
A very cocky and confident kind of, you were exuding that. Like, you were exuding confidence in that verse. And you could see it also on the video. Like, if you watch the video, that's a dope video, too. Very stripped down, very, like, raw. So kudos on
that.
That was a really good song, and then that was the Cool Weirdos self-entitled song is a really good follow-up.
Great. I appreciate that.
The next thing I wanted to talk to you about, aside from the Cool Weirdos, is your comedy web series that I just watched for the first time. And honestly, like, yo, you're funny.
As long as you've been my Instagram friend, as long as I've been promoting, you just watched.
Yo, you're right. You know what? You're right. I did you kind of dirty. But listen. I do my homework. So I was like, okay, he's going to be here. Though. So what? No, don't do that. Don't do that.
I'm just teasing. Like, I know what I'm saying is I know how the game goes. Everybody is so engulfed in doing what they're doing. You get what I'm saying?
You're
like,
absolutely right. That's,
and I have, like, I feel like the show is timeless. So it doesn't matter when you actually tune into it.
And you know what? I just put up a post. Like, you know, friends should be supporting other friends and their ideas and listening to them or whatever. So that ain't right that I just watched the show. So my bad. My bad. Number one. Number two, the show, the name of the show is We Got a Good Thing. Yeah. And it reminds me almost like of Martin mixed with Living Single, mixed with like all these shows from the 90s, but with a contemporary twist where you know that you're in present day and you act in it. The name of your character is Roy.
Roy.
And you're funny.
Thank you.
No, because we've had a rapport for a little, like, less than a year, but enough to where I can tell what kind of personality you have. And I didn't get funny. You cool, but I didn't get funny from you initially when we started talking. So when I saw this, I was like, wow, this is you completely transformed. And that was so cool to see kind of develop through the episode that I watched. On top of the fact, I know I'm talking a lot, but I just need to let this out because...
No, that's cool.
Because
that's cool.
I was like, whoa. But you guys have full scenes. There's like a full, like the theme music that comes on in the beginning with intros. There's like, there are different, you're in a hospital, you're in an apartment, there are so many different sets. How did this come about? Like, how did you get these actors who are, by the way, probably not well-known actors, but really good actors?
Yeah.
Talk to me about that.
Yeah, it's crazy that you mentioned the 90s and then, you know, the whole nostalgia, Martin and, and Living Single, because honestly, what happened was I was acting and I'm like, okay, I'm really, like, not tired of acting, but I'm acting in things where I feel like I can do better. As a director, I started off directing plays and things of that nature. So I wanted to take it a notch up. I wanted to get, you know, just not get out of the theater, but stop doing theater for a while and, you know, try to focus on something else. So just a little background. I met Derek McLaurin, which is on Instagram. His name is Bloat God. He's actually the lead character in the show. Well, I met him at an acting class, and out of everybody there, me and him just clicked right away.
Right.
And we tried to do this with something else. He tried to start a show. It just really didn't work out. And one day he hit me with an idea that was like basically loosely based on his life because he's from VA. So he basically came up to New York to be an actor. And once we connected and he sent me a first draft, it was a draft of the show. Once I read that, I was trying to do a drama which entailed more components than I didn't know how I was going to actually make it happen.
Right.
So I said, you know what? Let me start off with a comedy. Let me start off with something light and let me start off with less characters. Because everything for me is a practice. You know, like a doctor is always practicing. He has a practice. A lawyer has a practice, right? Mm-hmm. So this is all practice. So I don't really believe in the whole schooling thing. Mm-hmm. I just believe in doing it.
Right.
So what we did was, you know, we came together. I wrote the episodes out. I wrote 5 episodes for the first season. I knew I wanted to direct. So I, at the time, Derek had a lot of things going on with some film that he had done. So I said it would be perfect to make him the lead. You get what I'm saying? Because he had some attention on him at that particular time. Mm-hmm. Not to mention, like I said, the story is loosely based on his life. So the collective of the show coming together, if you look at the credits, he's credited as one of the creators of the show. We basically pulled our resources and put all these people together behind the scenes and in front of the scenes, along with the equipment. And we did it on a low budget. But me and my DP, which is Byron Green, he shot the show. We would study.
What's a DP? What is that?
Director of photography.
Oh, okay. Continue.
So, yeah, it's the person who shoots, the camera guy who shoots the show.
Got it.
So before we shot, because before I turn the camera on, I just want to make sure we've done as much research as possible. And we used to sit down and I used to point out certain things. And I used to say, look at this. You see this? Look at this. You see this? We need to make sure our edits look better. When I watch TV, if I see anything off, it kind of turns me off from the show.
Gotcha.
So I was trying to test myself to see how well I can put something together, being the director and the leader of the show. And, I mean, it came together well. we got these characters, these great actors together who I personally believed in, and I still do. Mm-hmm. And what I notice, what people may not understand, is what always makes a great show is the chemistry. Mm. So we didn't really know each other from A Can of Paint. Like, me and Jada, who plays Janelle, we mm-hmm. actually met each other doing a play. And okay. that was around the time when we, you know, I was writing the show and I was looking for characters. Mm-hmm. Derek and Diana, which plays Lisa, which mm-hmm. is his co-star on the show, they worked together before on a show.
Gotcha.
And then I was introduced to Big P, which plays the character of Julian. And from there, I would have them come over to my house and we would just practice. But the practice was all about, before we got into the script, mm-hmm. I made sure we warmed up to each other to create chemistry.
Right.
I made sure we was as real as we could be with each other so we can bring that magic when the camera is on. Within doing that, within building the chemistry, it was easier for us to work together because it became natural. The script became natural. Everybody can relate to being being in their relationship right. for about a year and mm-hmm. moving in with someone and just putting it together. So we became like a family. And I had their undivided attention with this. They were dedicated and committed, and we made it happen. And off of that, I was able to lock down a film studio for the second season, because the first season we was actually inside of a house. We mm-hmm. just lit it well. I just did my research. Like mm-hmm. I said, Byron and Derek, you know, my partners in this, we made sure that we were crossing our T's and dotting our I's.
Since you're the writer, you're writing for the girls as well.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
How? Like, where are you pulling the inspiration from to write from a girl's perspective? Because, I don't know, there was a scene between Janelle and Lisa. They were talking about breaking up and Lisa having, I don't want to spoil it. But anyways, they were talking to each other about what it feels like to break up and to have to move on and how hard that can be. Mm-hmm. And so if you're not a girl, you don't really understand that perspective.
In regards to the second season, there's another writer that I had on the show. So I did a play, and the person who played that I did was the director of it. And she's a writer and an actress as well.
Gotcha.
Although you see me wearing a lot of hats, I'm okay with not wearing a lot of hats. Mm. So in regards to this, I know how to delegate work. So basically, I was a part of her show, and I knew that I like the writing and everything, so I asked her to write on this show.
Okay.
So that scene that you're talking about, she actually wrote that scene.
She
sent it to me, and I tightened it up, and we went in. But she, you know, I got to give her credit for writing that particular scene. But the first season, it was basically all me. I have a lot of women in my family, I guess. I really don't know how I'm able to do that, but I'm able to put myself in other people's shoes. Hmm. I can morph. It's weird, but I definitely can feel what other people may feel in a certain situation. And that comes from paying attention in relationships, paying mm-hmm. attention in friendships. If you pay attention to the world, it's easy to write from other perspectives.
Okay. And so what is your ultimate goal with this web series? Where do you want to see it go?
Well, when I started this show, it was to become a content creator. So my whole point of this was, trying to get through the gatekeeper and get to one of the studio heads or one of the TV networks. Even if they don't pick up the show, I just want to let them know that I'm here.
Yes.
Right? And I'm here and I'm a content creator. So if you don't like this, guess what? I have something else to pitch you right away. Mm-hmm. I have something else on deck right away. So the ultimate goal for this show is basically, right now I'm in talks with trying to get it to certain networks. And this is definitely a process. I've had some meetings. Nothing solid has happened yet, but I'm pretty hopeful with this show. And I really believe in this thing. Like, it's a great show. People are grasping it late and they're coming up on it late. But everybody who comes up on it, I get a DM like, oh my God, the show is so funny. Like, I just got about 10 new people that learned about the show lately because of everything that we're doing with the Cool Weirdos as well.
Right.
Not only that, I built up a nice following on Facebook because that's where I was promoting the show. And I promoted it more on Facebook than YouTube. And I gained 20,000 views, between 15 and 20,000 views on the first episode, first season alone. Right. And I was able to build a little We Got a Good Thing community where people basically were interacting after every episode. Comments was going crazy. So
yeah,
and the people actually demanded a season two.
Dope.
I wasn't gonna do a season two. The people demand.
Dope. Yeah. And even if somebody joins in 2 minutes ago, that's still somebody else that added onto the roster of people who are watching your show or who care about your show.
That's actually great. It's funny because when you start something, like I remember the date on when I started it, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, wow, it's been a minute, but it really hasn't. You get what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
It takes a while for things to spread sometimes.
Absolutely. It's the persistence and the dedication that ultimately takes you to where you need to go.
And also appreciating the journey, right? Like, success is not sweet as it would be if you didn't appreciate the journey.
Yep.
You have to appreciate what you've been through in order for the success to actually make some type of sense.
Mm-hmm.
Or for you to gain some type of fucking self-gratification
fulfillment
from what you did. Yeah,
right.
Exactly.
Right.
This is life to me. Art is life to me.
Right. So it's like back to your point of like whether or not whatever happens, you'll always be an artist regardless.
Always.
Whether one person sees it or 20,000 people see it, you still create. So that's ultimately what matters.
I'm going to entertain regardless. I don't care if it's 5 people mm-hmm. in the audience. I'm going to entertain those 5 people.
That's what it's all about. Now, I hear that there is a Cool Weirdos project in the works that's coming out possibly next month. A little birdie
mm-hmm.
told me.
Mm-hmm.
Do we get a Lana Jarreau song? Are they all features? Like, what can we expect?
So we're just in a process of putting it together to figure out exactly how we're going to move with it.
Yeah.
Being that this is the collective, we want to make sure we showcase the collective a certain way. But you will be getting a Lana Jarreau project next year.
Okay.
First quarter.
So
that's pretty soon. But Director's Cut was a taste of Lana Jarreau. That record was produced by me and the Cool Weirdos record as well.
Oh, you produced, those beats are yours?
Yeah, correct.
Wow.
Correct.
All right.
So, yeah, that's me putting in my work in the crew and letting them know that, yeah, I'm here, and let's do it. And, just to have my crew back me like that and jump on the records and we make them Cool Weirdos, that's a blessing itself.
Right. That's crazy. Where do you find the time to do all these things? How are you a parent and a director and a writer and an artist and a producer? Like where? When?
I don't believe in sleep.
Oh.
I just don't believe in sleep. Sometimes I only get about 4 to 5 hours of sleep. And it's one of those things where it comes so naturally, like I can't really explain it. It's kind of before everything.
Right.
You get what I'm saying? Like it's really like nothing holds in my life. Nothing besides my son really holds as much weight than being creative. And it's like being creative is like eating for me. Like I need to be.
Right. You need it to live.
So,
I hear you.
Yeah. So.
Okay. So what is the ultimate goal for you? Just in general, where do you want to see yourself? Let's say 10, 15 years. Like what's the ultimate accomplishment, the ultimate goal for you? Like what is your ideal situation?
10, 20 years from now. Wow. That's a good question. I'm not too sure yet.
Fair.
I'm not too sure yet. You know what? We're going to have another interview,
right.
I'm pretty sure, in the future, and we can revisit that question. Right now, what I'm focused on, what's one of my main motivations, was for right now, my son, I'm like a superhero to him. So once they grow up, that tends to change. So a lot of my dedication and determination comes from him being able to look at me and see that, wow, my father did this.
Yep.
Wow, my father built something for me to actually walk on to. It's not going to be as hard as it is for me, as it is, for him. It's not going to be that hard. I'm trying to make it a little bit easier for him with whatever he may want to do in life. So my focus is to be in a great position. I want to be rich and this, mm-hmm. that, and the third. I want to be healthy. I want to be financially stable. And I want everything, all the work that I'm putting in now to mean something later on a bigger scale. But if it doesn't, I'm always an artist.
Boom. There it is.
And honestly, it's meaning something right now, though. I guess I'm being a little modest, but it's meaning something right now. Like, we're making a major, major stamp right now with the Cool Weirdos brand and with the crew. And being a part of this collective is just a great thing for me. It's a great thing for everybody, and it keeps us all moving and headed towards the goal.
Thank you so much for taking the time to sit with me, or not, obviously we're doing this remotely, but for taking the time out to talk to me. And I'm glad we did, because I feel like I know you on a different level.
Mm-hmm.
And it was refreshing to talk to you, honestly. So
thanks,
tell everybody where they can find you on social media.
Well, on social media, you can find me on Instagram at Lana Jarreau. That's stated, that's original spelled backwards, LanaGiRo. Also, on SoundCloud is the same way, Lana Jarreau. So on YouTube is the same way, Lana Jarreau.
Awesome.
So any of those platforms, you could definitely find me. And just enjoy this journey with me. Hopefully you enjoy the journey with me and we can grow together.
In Jesus' name, amen. Hallelujah.
Amen.
Thank you, Lana Jerome.